Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, we are going to learn some anti-aging solutions from none other than Dr. Sandra Kaufman, who's a very intelligent physician. She's an anesthesiologist. She's been in the field of pediatric anesthesia and has developed an avid interest in anti-aging science as her hobby, which is now this amazing protocol. Welcome to the podcast, Sandra. Dr. Kaufman.
Thank you. Sandy. This is so exciting. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we love to talk about anti-aging here. I'm a plastic surgeon in California, and everything we do is about anti-aging. I'm getting more and more into bioregenerative therapies, learning about how we can trigger the body to turn on its own ability to behave more youthfully with stem cells and collagen biostimulators. So tell us a little bit about what got you into anti-aging and your background.
Sure. So I started out life as a cell biologist a very long time ago. And my father pointed out that cells don't have insurance policies, so they don't pay bills. So I went to med school. I am, as you said, I'm an anesthesiologist. So I'm sort of obsessed with what drugs do to the body, how the body manipulates chemicals, et cetera. I'm also a bit of an amateur athlete. I'm a rock climber. I'm a mountain climber. And I decided when I was 45 that I was going to figure out why cells aged. And it seemed a little bit silly, but I started to figure it out at least. And I decided that your cells age for seven very particular reasons, at least seven categories. Many people talk about the hallmarks of aging, but I think the categorization is a little bit peculiar. So I like the seven tenets of aging, and it's all based on cell biology. And then I developed a rating system to be able to determine which molecular agents did what in which categories and how efficacious they were. So I like to think that longevity choices are now, it's a mathematical algorithm instead of a guessing game.
That's so interesting. So based on cell biology, are there new things coming out and developing this year? You've written two books. So your first book and now your second one is called Anti-Aging Solutions. What has changed in the time of the first book and the second book?
So when I wrote the first book, number one, it was a scattered science. No one, you know, there were the people talking about stem cells, the senescent cells, free radicals, DNA, telomeres. It was all sort of just, you know, here and there. So book one was an attempt to organize it and to create a system that we could sort of understand. And at the time, it came out in 2017, it was pretty much everything we knew. And we were just beginning to understand that molecular agents could actually be efficacious. Fast forward by a few years, we now not only understand those mechanisms, but we have more details in the mechanisms. Like for an example, in the DNA category, you know, we've always talked about telomeres and epigenetic modification, and now we're learning about DNA protection mechanisms or structural integrity of DNA. In the mitochondrial section, we've always known about free radicals and endogenous free radical scavengers and NAD deficiency. But new in the last couple of years is the realization there's something called a mitochondrial transition pore that flickers on and off when you're young, and it just sort of gapes open when you're old, and it causes significant cell death. And so that's a new thing that we've sort of now understood that we need to control. So in each particular category, we're just getting more granular details as to how best to sort of conquer the aging cell problem.
So much of my audience is lay people. And if you were to explain telomeres kind of in generic terms, can you kind of go over what that is to a cell and why does it matter? Why do telomeres matter?
Sure. No, absolutely. So as I said, you age in seven categories. Category one is DNA alterations. And the big things are telomeres. And if you look at your DNA, and most people remember from the fifth grade that it looks like a ladder that's sort of twisting, was discovered in 1957 by Watson and Crick. And, you know, 20 years ago, that's all we kind of knew. But now we know that at the end of this is something called the telomere, and it's a repeat sequence. It's a hexanucleotide. It repeats over and over and over again. It's nonsense DNA. But every time a cell is stressed or every time a cell replicates, it just gets a little shorter and a little shorter and a little shorter. And so your length of life is actually proportional to the length of your telomeres. So one of the things that we can do, number one, is measure it. And number two is we can keep track of all the things that are beneficial to our telomeres in an attempt to live better and longer. And that's what a telomere.
Yeah, those of us who have bad habits or smokers, for example, can have reduced length of their DNA. Or I was reading something that you wrote about that pack years of smoking can reduce your telomere length by 18%. That's something like taking 7 to 10 years off your life. And so that I think is really important for people to understand. Are there products that you can take at this moment in time to help improve the mitochondrial pores or the telomere capping?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. So when I wrote book one, there were like probably 14 or 15 base agents. Since then, scientists all over the globe are looking for various things to fix everything. There's something to fix pretty much everything at this point, which is fantastic, which is why I personally take 70 different things a day, which is probably a little bit of overkill, but I am avidly trying to not age. But absolutely, there's various things that do this. So, for example, your mitochondrial transition pore, spermidine is a wonderful agent. It increases cellular autophagy. It supports your DNA structure, reduces the relative risk of autoimmune disease, and it helps your mitochondrial transition pore. So that's kind of a neat one. In terms of telomere length, things that reduce oxidative stress help. There's a fantastically brilliant man named Bill Andrews who owns Sierra Sciences, and he's always trying to find things that increase your telomere length. At the moment, there's arguments whether or not you can increase it, but you can certainly stabilize it. So there's a product, cycloestrogenol, otherwise known as TA65, that's over the counter. And that's a fantastic product that is known to support your telomere length. So in every category, there are certainly things that will reduce the relative rate of aging, not necessarily reverse it yet. That's always the question. Can you reverse it? And the answer is not yet. But we can certainly slow down the aging process in each of the categories.
So talk a little bit. So the things that we're advocating are looking at how to prevent your DNA from being altered or unwound, how to improve telomere strength and stability, and how to improve mitochondrial aging. Also, tell us a little bit about sirtuins. I have to pronounce that correctly.
Sirtuin. Yes. So sirtuins are, right. So in my seven tenets, tenet three is what I call pathways, because there are pathways that start in your genes, you create RNA and then enzymes and proteins, and these pathways control longevity. I talk about the big three, and one of which, of course, are the sirtuins. There are 7 mammalian sirtuins. In the science geek world, they're known as histone deacetylase activators. However, what they really do is they turn very important enzymes on and off. So sirtuin 1, 3, and 6 are the key sirtuins for longevity. And basically, they control all aspects of cellular homeostasis, everything from fixing your DNA, controlling what type of energy source you're going to use, how much free radical scavenger you make. They even control your circadian rhythms. And unfortunately, over the course of time, as you get older, all of your sirtuin levels decline. We know example for sirtuin 3, which lives in your mitochondria. By the time you are 30, 35, it starts to fall. By the time you are 60, 65, the level is abysmal, which basically means that at least 84 to 85 proteins in your mitochondria are non-functional. And we know that if your mitochondria aren't functional, all the organs that require energy are going to fail. And this is why we have kidney disease as we get older, heart disease, brain malfunction. So a big part of this is actually activating your sirtuins. There's the sirtuin spiel.
That's so interesting. That may be kind of why all the efficiencies of the body just slowly start to drag. Your heart is less efficient, your kidneys are less good at filtering, and like just slow, decrepit changes of aging. Do you envision a day where we're all going to be taking 70 supplements a day? Do you literally take 70? That's interesting.
No, I literally do take 70. You know, on weekends, maybe I back off to 40 and then I feel like I'm cheating myself. I do. And it's actually quite silly, but I absolutely do this. And everything I take has a very, very specific reason. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not insane. It's not crazy. Although people would argue that I'm nuts. Everything is directed towards something particular. But the important thing about sirtuins is people are going to get all excited and go, okay, I need to go to activate my sirtuins. The key to these enzymes is that they're NAD dependent.
Right.
And NAD is a big deal in the longevity world right now, because NAD falls as you get older. You need it for very specific reasons in your system. Number one, it's in the electron transport chain, and that sits in the mitochondria and makes energy. So without NAD, you're not making any energy. Two, you need it for DNA repair mechanisms. So if you are NAD deficient and you have DNA damage, you're more likely to get cancer over time. Mm-hmm. Three, we use it as a sirtuin coenzyme. So we need to make these sirtuins work. And three, it's a communication device between the nucleus and the mitochondria that tells your body how much energy you have and then therefore what to do with it. We know that over the age of 40, on average, most people are NAD deficient. As a consequence, the world of NAD precursors has sort of exploded. There's nicotinamide riboside, there's nicotinamide mononucleotide. You can get it oral, IV, patches, nasal spray. It's sort of a very competitive world right now. And the reason is because we know that it's extremely important, because without NAD, a whole lot of systems are going to take a dive, one of which is the sirtuins. So basically, you're going to lose cellular homeostasis throughout your body, which is a huge contributor to aging. And that one's an easy fix, right? All you need to do is to know about it and you can fix it.
Are there testing kits where you can kind of evaluate your level of NAD levels at home or in the lab?
There absolutely are. There used to be none. The last few years, two or three have popped up. Absolutely. You can send for it, send in a blood sample, and they'll tell you what your levels are. Absolutely.
Interesting. And that really plummets even as you get from 25 to 40. Like, the levels drop precipitously. It's kind of crazy. And it really correlates with adult tiredness and fatigue, that feeling of like when you get enough sleep but you still wake up and you're tired the next day and nothing just shakes that fatigue. It's so interesting. I started taking NAD recently and it's just kind of crazy how it improves your overall energy and outlook. Even my vision seems to be a little bit better. Things that you read about that are people think that there's no truth to it, but there really is. There was a recent controversy about NAD or NMR supplements being potentially some versions of the precursors being taken off the market. Tell us about that.
So that's an excellent question. So there's a gentleman, David Sinclair, and he is just extremely exuberant about NMN. Yeah. Unfortunately, he's probably a bit too exuberant and has now convinced the FDA that perhaps NMN should not be a supplement and in fact should be a medication. We're sort of on the fence right now. I personally bought a case of NMN just in case it's no longer available in the near future. The good news is that some form of an NAD precursor will remain available. It's just, it's outrageous to think that that would not be available. It's just a matter of what's it going to be, who are we going to get it from, and what form it's going to be in. But the whole world knows that NAD is a huge aspect in the longevity field. Now, it's not the only one, but it's very important.
What is the consumer to do? Because it seems very much like the vitamin and supplement industry, where much of this is unregulated. How do you know which brand of NAD and NMN and NMR out there are actually selling what they say they're selling, that they're stable compounds, that are, you haven't bought a case of stuff that's going to degrade in a year?
It's an excellent question, and it's really hard to say. In terms of NR, which is nicotinamide riboside, at the moment it's only made by one company, which is ChromaDex, and they have an extremely good track record. NMN is a little bit harder because more people make it. I tend to just get mine from a very reputable company where I get, four or five different products. It stood the test of time. The key is to get things from just very reputable companies.
Can we ask you which company?
Dr. Joe Schmo's company line may not be that great, but there are absolute companies that specialize in specific substances, and they're pretty easy to find.
Can you recommend the one that you're using?
Sure. And granted, I get zero kickbacks. I don't want anyone to think that like this is going to benefit me in any way, shape, or form. There's a company down here in Florida called Rev Genetics, and I think they do an outstanding job with their products. So for example, they make, I love curcumin. I think it's fantastic. It walks on water. It does many things in many aspects of your cell. The bioavailability traditionally is very poor, but they put it in something called a nanomycel. And it is legitimately 277 times more available than regular curcumin. And the reason I know that, because they print it on their bottle, there's a huge 277. And I also know that if I take more than 3 pills a day, I turn yellow. So I'm pretty convinced that the bioavailability is exactly what they say it is. But they do an extremely good job of packaging things in bioavailable forms or with high quality. So I trust them.
Oh, interesting. And with your regimen of 70 different products, that sounds like a $1 million regimen. First of all, like, isn't that going to be expensive for the average person to maintain? And secondly, how do you not get nausea taking all these like handfuls of supplements? On a practical note.
Very, very, very good question. So what's interesting is it is 70 different things. However, if you read the back of a bottle, and the question is how many milligrams per thing do you need, right? All the milligrammage is estimated from rodent studies, which is extrapolated to human studies. I mean, that there are some human studies, but mostly it's an extrapolation. And they study one thing at a time. And I firmly believe from an anesthetic / pharmacological perspective that they're synergistic. So where it says take 4 capsules a day, I usually take 20 to 25% of the recommended dose. Because they're synergistic. So for example, if I take 2 different sirtuin-1 activators, I'm not going to take a full dose of both. I take partial doses. Mm-hmm. So I take way less, number one. So it makes it significantly less expensive. Number two, I troll for sales. You know, most women troll for jewelry or shoes or purses. I troll for supplements. And you buy anything from one company and then they send you coupons for more stuff. So that's extremely useful. In terms of the nausea, you just spread things out. If you think about the way drugs work, you worry about blood levels, bioavailability, half-life, that sort of thing. So, you know, if you're looking at normal drugs, they'll say, you know, take X dose 3 times a day or 2 times a day or once a day. And it depends on the blood levels and the rate of excretion. And so having calculated all of that for all of these things, I take a little bit, and then depending on how long it lasts, I'll either take something like something in the same family, one in the morning, one at night, or one in the afternoon, or so everything gets sort of spread out to cover myself biologically for over the 24-hour period. Therefore, it's not ever physiologically overwhelming.
Interesting. So tenant one was the DNA stability and alteration repair. And tenant two had to do with mitochondria. The third tenant we talked about, sirtuins and pathways. And then what about tenant four and five? Four is quality control repair mechanisms, right? Tell us a little
bit. So the way it became quality control is the idea that your cell is a factory and no factory works perfectly all the time. Things break and widgets don't come out correctly. Therefore, you have a ton of DNA errors. In fact, you've 10 to the fourth or fifth DNA errors per cell per day. This is huge, right? This is a setup for extreme cell failure. It's a setup for senescent cell and cancers. Therefore, you have 4 DNA repair mechanisms. And generally speaking, they do a very good job. But of course, as you get older, repair mechanisms fail. So that's something that we like to target. Same thing happens with proteins. Your cells are little protein factories. That's what they make. Those are the widgets. And that fails as well. So you have protein repair mechanisms that are extraordinarily important to keep intact. And of course, they diminish over time. And then I put autophagy into this category because entire cell pieces, the suborganelles can fail over time and they have to get recycled. So all of that falls into the quality control of the cell. The good news is that all of those things have answers, so you can fix them. So that's 4. And then 5 is the idea that your inflammatory system comes from your immune system. So as your immune system protects you as you get older, I'm sorry, your immune system protects you when you're younger. As you get older, it fails. So you're set up for number one, increasing infection risk and decreasing response to vaccines. But at the same time, you become systemically inflamed because you can't control all the cytokines. So that is a huge problem. So much so that there's a word called inflammaging. So as you get older, we really need to control that because the increase in all the interleukins and such has caused like havoc around your body. So that is tenet 4 and 5.
And tenet 6 has to do, well, 5 has to do with your immune system also kind of surveilling and controlling mm-hmm. all that. Yeah. It's amazing that the body even works at all with all these cell errors and like very delicate balance. It's really interesting. And then in terms of looking at stem cells and what stem cells need to perpetuate themselves, that how do we focus on having more pluripotent stem cells just circulating throughout our system? Like in aesthetics, we're actually harvesting and injecting actual stem cells or platelet-rich, growth factors, platelet-rich plasma. Talk a little bit.
So that falls into 10 and 6, and I call this individual cell requirements. So as you said, we want to increase our stem cells and we want to decrease our senescent cells. And then of course it's a recognition that a red cell needs something, then a liver cell, then a kidney cell, But in terms of stem cells, these are just cells that we horribly need to protect, right? They live in specialized niches. The environment protects them, they protect their environments. As we get older, they fall victim to the same thing that every other cell is, right? So there's DNA damage, there's oxidative damage, every possible thing that afflicts our cells afflicts them. And of course that reduces our longevity. The good news is that there are a variety of things that you can sort of put in your body that protect your stem cells. And what's also really interesting is your stem cells, despite the fact that they have telomerase, and so they can live longer than regular non-stem cells, you still need to not harvest them all the time because you still do have a limited number of them. So there is a fine balance between keeping them healthy, utilizing them around your body, but also keeping enough in supply to last you for your 120 some years that you're going to need them for.
Yeah, is that
Anyway, so
human lifespan 20?
I think that's going to be for a while. That's 120, 125 is going to be the limit of human lifespan. I
Interesting.
think. I could be wrong. That's my hypothesis based on like sort of putting all of these pieces together.
What's something
But
that
I love the idea of using the stem cells for regenerative medicine. The key, I mean, if you have your own, that's fantastic. The older you get, the less useful they are going to be. Of course, borrowing somebody else's stem cells, you need to leave the country for. I am a huge proponent of exosomes. I just think that's unbelievably brilliant. And I personally inject exosomes every month.
Oh, really? Wow. Which state do you live in?
Florida.
I think they're a little more liberal with that in Florida, right?
Well, no one really knows what I do because it's me. I'm a physician, right? So we get to call a company, order exosomes. They show up at my home. I freeze them and then I defrost them once a month and inject them. And I get access to IVs because I'm an anesthesiologist. So no one really pays attention to what I do, which is fantastic.
You like your own little scientific experiment going on over there. Are you doing IV infusion therapy, which like glutathione and NAD infusions are so popular these days, but you wonder how effective that is?
It's a good question. I started only because I had it available. I put my exosomes in and then I bolus some glutathione before I hook up some saline to get everything in. I really have no idea if it works or not. I think that the IV NAD is sort of interesting, only in that if you're extremely deficient, it would be useful to sort of bolus up your levels. But if you're patient and you take it orally within 2 weeks to 3 weeks, you can probably get to the same place. So, is an IV infusion absolutely necessary? It just sort of depends on who you are, how deficient you are, and if you have adequate intestinal absorption rates.
What have you noticed from injecting exosomes? And is there a location? Like we're using exosomes for topical skin therapy, microneedling. Some people are injecting exosomes as well for facial changes. Where are you injecting? Just
So
systemic.
I use it systemically, number one. And then it's funny, I used to PRP my own face all the time. And now I just use exosomes. So I use sub-Q injections probably once a month, once every other month. And I just think it makes your skin look so much healthier. You sort of glow a little bit, you have more sub-Q fat, you look less old person emaciated, I think. And I started doing it to friends and family, and they love it. They swear by it.
Amazing. I'm gonna have to come visit you in Florida and you have to come out to LA and we'll compare strategies. But
Deal. That would be fun. Now, I would love to do that because, I almost wrote a book on dermatology and skincare. And then I realized, I'm not a dermatologist. I don't know if anyone's actually going to read this. But skin is like every other organ, and it's amazing how you can manipulate it. It's really, I just think it's so much fun.
it's fascinating, and it changes so much dermal atrophy, so much fat thinning and muscular change. and even facial bone density changes. I really think we have a lot of frontier to push in terms of like how to retain muscle and bone. I think those are very important things for human frailty. And this idea of living to be 120 is awesome, but if you're very like decrepit and buckled over with no muscular skeletal support, you know, is it worth it to live to be 120?
So, well, no, in point of the point of lifespan versus health span, right? I don't want to be in a wheelchair when I'm 120. I want to be climbing the same rocks that I'm climbing now, right? Because it's fun. And the good news is on a molecular level, we can defeat those things. So as an example, your stem cells, I mean, they're sitting in their happy little niche. And as they get older, they get lazier. And apparently it is really easy for your stem cell to make a fat cell versus a muscle cell. But if you take extra branched chain amino acids and you sort of get some leucine into your stem cell niche, you will make muscle cell instead of fat cell. So that's manipulatable, right? At the same time, when you talk about bone structure, there's the balance between osteoblasts that make bone and osteoclasts that break it down. And we know that all the inflammatory issues activate your osteoclasts. So the more inflamed you are, the less bone density you're going to have. And so you can actually manipulate that ratio. So you can maintain your bone structure. You sort of have to know what to do. And then in terms of sub-Q fat, it's very interesting. There's a diabetic drug called pioglitazone or Actos that a lot of people used to use. And it actually redistributes your fat. And I love this about it. It takes it from your visceral area, which is, you know, associated with high morbidity and mortality, and it actually moves it to your sub-Q tissue. So not only are you, you know, reducing your glycemic effect, you're also rebuilding your sub-Q tissues, which is just miraculous.
That is miraculous. Do you have any thoughts about the new weight loss drugs and the Ozempic craze? And that also really is so efficient at removing visceral fat and retaining body muscle mass is incredible. Like you just lose pure visceral fat.
Well, I don't know that much about it. I'm certainly not an endocrinologist, but my impression is it affects your desire to eat. Yes. So people that are generally hungry and they take it and then they're not hungry, they don't eat. I mean, you could tape your mouth shut and get the same effect. I think that the American public is, you know, constantly just looking for the easiest way to lose weight. And in fact, I'm a huge proponent of exercise. I exercise every day. I am a bit of a junk food junkie and everyone makes fun of me for that. That being said, there's 7 steps to creating fat in fat cells, and you can biochemically block pretty much all of it. So there are many ways to do this that I think maybe might be a little bit easier than like, you know, women killing each other to get the, like, you know, the remnants of this drug that's so popular now. But there's many ways to skin a cat, you know.
What are some things from your new book of anti-aging solutions that you think the average person out there should start thinking about for their life?
Excellent question. I think that whenever I say, you know, anti-aging or longevity medicine, everyone talks about their parents, which is always incredibly entertaining, as if they're not aging, but their parents are, right? And in reality, we start aging by the time we're 35. That's when things start taking a dive. Your GFR in your kidney actually starts dropping by like the time you're like late 20s. So we are actively aging. People just don't want to see it in themselves. So take home message number one, it's never too early to start worrying about longevity and health, and it's never too late. So even in your 90s, you can certainly do things to make yourself better and healthier to improve whatever state you're in. And then take home message number two is, I know people hear about all these supplements and they think that it's sort of like ridiculous. It's crazy. It's just someone's trying to make some money, blah, 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 blah. And the point of writing book one and book two is that it's a very scientific analysis with a zillion, you know, medical citations to demonstrate that the stuff isn't crazy. You really can manipulate your cells and you really can slow down the aging process. So it's not nuts. It's not hocus pocus. And I guess then the third take home message is, you know, you're a cosmetic surgeon. And I think that's fantastic, right? And I love cosmetic surgery, but people have to understand that I consider that speckle, right? That is your exterior. And even if your exterior looks amazing, your interior may be absolutely decrepit. So you have to keep track of both, right? I'm a big fan of cosmetic surgery. You need it, great. I've had my eyelids done. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you can ignore the inside. So, you know, huge proponent of taking care of your whole body, not just the inside or the outside.
Oh, definitely. I think that's something I'm trying to teach my patients and our listeners and everybody, that you have to age from within. You have to protect the essence of cellular aging is what's the most important thing. Have you tried treatments like Botox and fillers? Any thoughts on those?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not a huge filler fan, actually. I love Botox. Again, it's spackle, right? You know, whenever anyone has seven lines across their forehead, they always like tired and aged. So of course I Botox. I do not use fillers. I used to use PRP, and I think that sort of initiated tissue reconstruction. And now, of course, I use the exosomes. I think it's fantastic, but it's not longevity. It's just, you know, it's topical beautification.
Exactly. Aging is coming for all of us. So those of us who are not doing some preventative internal measures are going to feel it. But I definitely love the collagen biostimulators, which are PLLA, which is polylactic acid, which is kind of the material that sutures are made of, dissolvable sutures. Once we inject that, collagen grows around them, and they're eventually replaced by your own inert natural collagen that can last, you know, up to 5 years or more. So I love that. It's Sculptra. Or Radius is another one that stimulates collagen production. So in case you want to learn about that, that's an awesome way to build scaffolding and native collagen, like brand new baby collagen. I love that idea.
Yeah, the other thing I like to point out is that, because, you know, we see the collagen in our skin, but it's everywhere, right? I mean, there's 20 some types of collagen. It's in your bone, it's in your connective tissue. And what's cool is if you take oral collagen, it goes to your fibroblasts, and then again, you make more of your endogenous collagen, like all over the place, right? So that's what I love, and I think it's actually helping skin as well.
I'll have to send you some of my collagen peptide powder, which is really awesome in terms of, ooh. I love it for joint and bone health, and everything works better, and your skin will definitely feel better.
I would love to try that.
Definitely send you a little goodie bag of stuff to try. What's one thing everyone should know, regardless of their background, about biohacking and the biohacking industry in general?
I think that some of it is garbage, but the vast majority is real. The word biohacking always turns people off because it sounds like some brutal, horrible something. In reality, it's just about trying to make your life better. And regardless of who you are and what stage of life you are, you can always be a little bit better, right? One of my absolute favorite biohacks that I get asked about all the time is actually presbyopia, right? As we get older, we all need, you know, reading glasses to see up closer in the dark. And the answer is, you don't have to do that. Like, there's eye drops, those carnosine eye drops you put in twice a day, and your vision or your ability to see up close or to focus just gets extraordinarily better. So there are these little things that you can do that just—
Wait, how do I not know about that? I need to get some. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So there's two different eye drops. One is, so carnosine is a transglycosylator. The lens, it just gets stiff over time. Oxidative damage, glycosylation, that sort of thing. It just gets stiff, and that's why you can't focus. So eye drops actually can get carnosine into your lens, and it just vastly improves. So I went from needing reading glasses to not needing anything at all, ever. The other eye drops that are really nice, they're called Visomit, and they're SKQ1 mitochondrial enhancers. And they actually improve your vision as well, because they help the mitochondria in your cones and rods that sit in your retina in the back of your eyeball. So I use two eye drops a day, and my vision is impeccable, and I'm old, so that says a lot.
Wow, that's incredible. What a great tidbit. What kind of research still needs to be done to push the next frontier, like looking at the next 5 years? Are there certain areas where you think we're being held back that we're going to push through? Have some breakthroughs?
I think there's going to be tons of breakthroughs on every level. People are just doing amazing stuff. There's a group that's working on gene therapy, for example, to increase telomerase in cells or to increase clotho proteins. You know, people are going down crazy roads, and I think some of it's going to pay off and some of it's not. I think we're going to get better at exosomes and engineering like exactly what's in an exosome. I think some people are actually undergoing plasmapheresis with the idea of getting rid of stuff from your bloodstream that's making you old. I think it's a little crazy right now, but you know, we may be better at that. I think we're going to get more specific agents aimed at very specific cellular mechanisms. Right now, there are no actual drugs aimed at longevity. We sort of use things because they happen to have byproducts, or we use natural agents that happen to be useful for whatever reason. But I think over the course of time, it'll be more scientifically and physician engineered to actually manipulate longevity.
I agree. Are you a fan of rapamycin, mTOR, any of these other anti-aging drugs that we've heard of?
I am a fan of all of them except rapamycin. I love metformin. I take, you know, glitazone. I take hydralazine. I take ACE inhibitors. I don't have any diseases, but I take all the stuff anyway. The one that I'm not a fan of is rapamycin because the mTOR pathway controls building of tissues. It controls turnover of tissues. So for example, muscle tissue is very important. And if you block it, you're going to become sarcopenic, which is a problem because as you get older, you're more frail and it increases morbidity and mortality. Blocking mTOR blocks hippocampal cells. And without hippocampal cells, you're not going to make any new memories. It also can block intestinal turnover. So if you block mTOR completely with rapamycin, that's a huge problem. Now, granted, in rodent studies, if you block it, they actually look fantastic. Their skin looks better. They look better. So every indication suggests that they might be better, but we can't really ask them. And there are indications that memory of these animals does drop. So as a consequence, I don't think that absolute blocking of the mTOR pathway is a great idea. I think partial blockade is probably fine. And metformin is actually a partial inhibitor. So, you know, I'm a big fan of that. But in terms of actually jumping on the rapamycin bandwagon, I think it's a little premature. They're working on rapalogs that I think are going to be partial inhibitors. And I think that's ultimately going to be the way to go. So I am not a fan, but of that particular one, but of the other ones, absolutely.
Amazing. And are you doing certain things in your daily schedule for autophagy, like intermittent fasting or hot or cold baths or plunges, sauna? Anything else that you're doing that's like really rejuvenative?
I wish I could be a caloric restriction person. I tried, and honestly, I turned into the biggest raving bitchy lunatic. So I'm not good at that. I take a lot of what they're called caloric restriction mimetics. They tell my body that I'm starving and it increases my AMP kinase pathways despite the fact that I'm not starving. So that's kind of cheating. I do exercise every day. I either swim, rock climb, lift weights, run, bike, something. So I think that's extraordinarily important. I'm a huge fan of red light and infrared light therapy. So every day I sit there for 8 to 10 minutes in front of a big light thing. And I even have a little portable one here in my office for when I like, you know, have a few minutes to sit around. I think that's an extremely useful therapy. It actually increases your mitochondrial output because it increases the spin rate of your ATPase enzyme. So that's kind of a cool thing. But in terms of hot and cold, I'm kind of a weather wimp. I live in Florida. I don't like being cold. You know, maybe for the first lap or two in the pool, I'm cold. After that, but I artificially activate my heat shock proteins, which is essentially the same thing. And then, of course, I do the exosomes and, every now and then I'll go through a course of polypeptides, but I think that's about it.
How about sleep? Do you have any preferred sleep schedule or amount of sleep? I know you've written about how important sleep is and how night shift workers have a lot more problems with their DNA cycles.
Oh, 100%. Right. So it's interesting. So, you know, I run an OR. I have a high stress job. And in the old days, I couldn't sleep. It was ridiculous. But because your circadian rhythms are driven by your sirtuins, I activate my sirtuins now on a regular basis. So I sleep eight hours a day. I am asleep by 9:15. And I get up at 5:20 and I generally, you know, unless there's something really strange going on, I sleep incredibly well and I wake up absolutely refreshed. I think that 8 hours is in fact the way to go. And I know people brag about how much sleep they don't need, but I think that in the end, that's going to do them in. Because as you said, when you screw up your circadian rhythms, you're screwing up your DNA repair mechanisms. Somewhere between 10 to 30% of your proteins are made at night while you're sleeping. And if you're not sleeping, you're not making those proteins. So you're going to get cell failure, DNA failure, and there's an increased risk of cancer with not sleeping regularly. So yes, I sleep a lot.
That's so important. And talk a little bit about women and menopause and what kind of changes do we need to do that are different? Like what biohacking should we be doing that's different from what men are doing? Are hormone replacements essential or thought of?
Oh gosh. Well, so the excellent question. So before you even hit menopause, right, every woman in the history of mankind, unless you died prematurely, has gone into menopause, right? So it's sort of like death and taxes. You're not really going to escape it. So knowing that it is coming, the question is, can you prevent it? And the answer is, I think that you can delay it significantly. We don't exactly know why menopause occurs, but a huge percentage of the problem is due to mitochondrial failure, because your oocytes have more mitochondria than any other cell in the body. It's somewhere between 500,000 to 1,000,000 mitochondria per cell. And you can argue because they're always changing, fusing and blah, blah, blah. But the density of your mitochondria is outrageous and your mitochondrial fail. They really do, which is why as women get older, you get more genetic issues with, you know, with children, Downs and all sorts of different trisomies, et cetera. So if you take care of your mitochondria, you are less likely to go into early menopause and you may be able to delay it significantly. Once you are in menopause, the earlier you start hormone replacement, the better off you are. If you don't take it for the first 5 to 10 years, and then you try to catch up with hormone replacement, you've already done ridiculous damage to all of your cells because most of your cells have estrogen receptors. Obviously, ratios are different depending on tissue type. But once the hormone disappears for a variety of years, there's no turning back. So you should absolutely, you know, assuming there's no medical contraindications, such as, you know, family history of cancer, et cetera, absolutely get on hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah, I think it's life-changing for so many women, but it's still such a difficult taboo topic and not enough providers who are experienced or good at it and still expensive. Like it's not really covered by most plans, when you're doing pellets and those kind of things. But I think we women age differently and uniquely, so that's a whole other field of research, I hope, that's going to happen. I love that your anti-aging solutions allow you as an individual to kind of cater the different supplements that you might be taking, whether you're very inflammatory or very immune-mediated problems, or you have a family history, or you're noticing certain things in your own genetics. Is that kind of the future, where we're going to be able to test ourselves and determine our weaknesses and then really cater our therapy to that?
Oh, it absolutely is the future. In fact, you could argue right now that it's kind of the present for some people. There are people that test themselves in every category, every 3 to 6 months, and then we sort of move their programs around. For people that don't want to do that, there's a baseline of things you absolutely have to do. You know, nicotinamide, as we talked about, NAD is one of them. Activating your sirtuins, protecting your DNA. There's a subset of things that everyone needs, right? On top of that, then it just gets personalized as you suggested. So based on your medical issues or your family history or, any concomitant things that you're sort of suffering through, we can absolutely cater a program to what you need, right? My the most easy example is pre-diabetic or diabetics. You're going to have the most problem with waste management, which is category 7, which is glycosylation issues. So if you fall into that category, then we pick things that have most points in category 7. And I have found that we can really, really help people profoundly by putting them on these programs. I personally am a junk food junkie, which, I shouldn't admit to, but I do. But I have a 7-step blocking of glycation such that my hemoglobin A1C is quite low. And I've gotten rid of most of the glycation around my body via molecular mechanisms.
I love that. I think these two books are going to be like my new Bible for the year ahead. This is such a great podcast to do on my birthday. Yay.
Yay. Happy birthday. You look good for 22.
I do, right? 39 forever.
Yes.
I can't thank you enough. I think you're absolutely brilliant, and I love how you've really thought about the aging process in such a stepwise manner and breaking it down and understanding really the cell biology of it. It's one of my big pet peeves is the biohacking industry is run by a bunch of people who are not even scientists, researchers, or doctors. And so it's so refreshing to see someone who's in the middle of being a practicing physician, who's a specialist in anesthesia and drug management, and like all this knowledge. Really curated well. So, congrats on two great books. Can't wait to read them. Where can
Thank
people,
you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
where can our listeners find you on your various handles?
So there's a website. I'm not very creative. So the first one is kaufmanprotocol.com because that's the name of the project and it's the name of the books. One is Kaufman Protocol, Why We Age and How to Stop It. And the second one, of course, is Kaufman Protocol Aging Solutions. So that's the easiest place to go. And then on Instagram, it is Kaufman Anti-Aging. And I would love to say that I'm on Facebook, but I kind of got tired of Facebook, so I don't really look at it anymore. So pretty much the website.
Amazing. Well, I would definitely love to meet you one of these days. Hopefully, you'll come out to California or I'll come to Florida. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast and teaching us how to biohack our aging process and all the tenets of longevity. That's it for now, guys. You can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, Drkay. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our collagen peptides, which I'm going to send you some, and amazing skincare to regenerate and rejuvenate. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.